This time it's guns for Christmas.
This is Hunting Humbug 101, a crash course in shooting down bad arguments.
Welcome to Hunting Humbug 101. Tonight's episode or tutorial is about false analogies. And initially we're going to directly read from the book Humbug, The Skeptic's Field Guide to Spotting Fallacies in Thinking, and then we're going to discuss false analogies.
False analogy, we have other terms and or related concepts that are sometimes used. Misuse of analogy, metaphor as argument, and cliche thinking.
The description of a false analogy is one: a false analogy occurs when an advocate presents an example of a phenomenon and implies that the example either proves or compellingly illustrates something about another phenomenon. An example might be an argument that access to firearms should not be severely restricted, as access to kitchen knives is also not severely restricted, and yet, like firearms, they are sometimes used to kill innocent people. This analogy deliberately ignores the critical difference between guns and kitchen knives. Such an example might have some value as a figurative analogy. The purpose of a figurative analogy is illustrative and metaphorical. But it's obviously flawed if it is intended as a literal analogy to be advanced as a proof.
Okay, and we develop an example. Glenn Tropicana is an investment advisor, and he is giving a sales pitch to a couple of prospective clients, Sheila and Dennis. Glenn is trying to persuade them to sign up for a regular monthly contribution to an investment scheme. The scheme may or may not be suspect. That is not the issue here. During his spiel, Glenn states, "You know what happens with a steady drip of water into a bucket? Before you know it, the bucket's full. If you invest only $200 a month, in no time, you'll have a great nest egg." Dennis replies, "That's all very well. But what if there's a hole in the bucket that we don't know about?"
Comment: Glenn has met his match in Dennis. Glenn attempted to use his analogy of water dripping into a bucket as a compelling illustration of the wisdom of making a regular contribution to the scheme he's promoting. However, Dennis is clearly a critical thinker and a skeptic. He recognized the fallacy in the analogy. When he recognized the fallacy, he could simply have said, "Investments are a lot more complex than water dripping into a bucket. You'll need to present me with a better argument." However, he chose to use Glenn's analogy against him by extending it and introducing a confounding variable, the possibility of a leak in the bucket.
A common problem with the use of analogy to support an argument is that another analogy can usually be found to support the opposite position. For example, there are many metaphors, proverbs, cliches, traditional homespun sayings, etc., in our own culture, which seemingly contradict each other. Consider a situation where someone may try to make a case for increasing the number of workers in a project team by citing the venerable proverb, "Many hands make light work." The proverb seems to be self-evidently true and supports the notion that an increase in the size of the team would be a reasonable position to take. However, someone else could use a plausible counter-proverb to support the opposite point of view, such as, "Too many cooks spoil the broth." The latter proverb invokes a common experience of some large teams: separate agendas, lack of coordination, too many chiefs, not enough Indians.
The fact that many proverbs are directly contradicted by other proverbs is an indication that reliance on proverbs or analogies in decision-making or resolution of issues is fraught with danger. We might, for example, be presented with an exciting once-in-a-lifetime business opportunity. We mull over the decision. A series of proverbs come to mind. Opportunity only knocks once. Make hay while the sun shines. Seize the day. Strike while the iron's hot. We invest. We go broke. Reflecting on our financial disaster, another set of proverbs comes to mind. Look before you leap. Act in haste. Repent at leisure. Haste makes waste. There's many a slip 'twixt the cup of the lip and the lip. Don't count your chickens before they hatch. Well, that's reading straight from the book Humbug. And we've gone on to develop false analogies a little bit more on our blog as well when we're coming across real-life examples. And I think, Dad, especially that last point about you can actually easily come up with counter-examples of analogies and proverbs. And so in that sense, you often wonder, well, what's the use of them in the first place? What's the use of analogy in the first place?
Yeah, I think one of the things that interests me about these folk sayings is that as I've made some informal sort of inquiries, and the same sort of folk sayings seem to pop up in different cultures and in different... It's almost like grandma's wisdom. And when grandma says, too many cooks spoil the broth, you just take it at face value and you say, it's fair enough, and so on. But a little more thought... and you realise that there are contrary arguments. So while grandma might think her proverb settles the issue, if you're a critical thinker, you really make a hypothesis perhaps that, what if the opposite is true, or can I think of a case where the opposite might be true? So you'll go beyond the simple cliche, which sounds right, and you really explore whether there are opposites that also sound equally plausible.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that the point of analogies is not to actually say they're no good, because they are very useful when they're used to illustrate a point. But people often make the mistake of saying that illustration, settles the matter. And I find that if you can obviously make your point without having to illustrate it with somebody, then that's obviously a lot clearer. But sometimes there are some things that, you do need that analogy to try and get people to see what you're trying to say. But to actually use that as a basis of an argument, on the other hand, can actually lead to a lot of trouble. Of course, the other point is that a lot of time then when people discover the idea of false analogy, they think as soon as someone makes an analogy, it's a false analogy. And so what you need to do is you actually need to see, does that analogy actually match up realistically with the point someone's trying to make? And so we tried to choose a pretty simple example in the book of comparing guns to knives. A lot of the time, of course, with fallacies and trying to explain them to people, you choose examples that are really quite simple to explain. But in real life, of course, they're never usually so simple. So the gun and the knife one is pretty obvious that guns and knives are completely different. A gun... to give a quick example of the changing nature of warfare, 200 years ago, you would not be able to get 13, 12-year-old kids in an army and be able to actually do any kind of real damage to an opposition, because they'd be carrying around, having to fight with swords and things like that, and an adult male would just have zero issues, killing an enemy soldier who was a 12-year-old boy. But now, of course, horrendously, in some of these armies in Africa and so on, you get these, 10-year-old kids running around with guns and actually being effective, because a gun gives a massive advantage and massive superiority. So they're completely different. And of course, the other issue with that analogy is knives have a real purpose in the kitchen. They're a useful tool for preparing meals, whereas guns, of course, have zero purpose in the kitchen. And so it's very difficult to find a similar kind of use for guns besides, sports shooting and things like that. And so when you're looking at the analogy, superficially you might think, oh, that kind of makes sense. But when you delve a little deeper, a little below the surface, it should become pretty clear that, the analogy is completely bankrupt of any usefulness in that particular example we gave. And I certainly note that there are some analogies people make that are just so obviously flawed. But nevertheless, some people might find them convincing. And I think the counterexample is one of the best tricks to use. So one of the ones I put on the blog, which I'll insert the audio here, is the argument from Banana, which is an argument a creationist came up with, and he made the analogy he called it the atheist's nightmare, because bananas were obviously made by God for humans to eat, because they're exactly like a can of soda. So I'll quickly play that video, audio now, and then we'll come back and discuss analogies further.
Okay.
Oh, this guy. Behold, the atheist's nightmare. Now, if you study a well-made banana, you'll find on the far side, there are three ridges. On the close side, two ridges. If you get your hand ready to grip a banana, you'll find on the far side, there are three grooves. On the close side, two grooves. The banana and the hand are perfectly made one for the other. You'll find the maker of the banana, Almighty God, has made it with a non-slip surface. It has outward indicators of inward contents. Green, too early. Yellow, just right. Black, too late. Now, if you go to the top of the banana, you'll find, as with the soda can makers, they placed a tab at the top. So God has placed a tab at the top. When you pull the tab, the contents don't squirt in your face. You'll find the wrapper, which is biodegradable, has perforations. Notice how gracefully it sits over the human hand. Notice it has a point at the top for ease of entry. It's just the right shape for the human mouth. It's chewy, easy to digest, and it's even curved toward the face to make the whole process so much easier. Seriously, Kurt, the whole of creation testifies to the genius of God's creative power.
Anyway, so the argument from Banana, I mean, that the thing I pointed out in the post is it's so easy to turn that against him. So, for example, why didn't God make coconuts with screw-top lids, you know? So you pick out, that's an example of stacking the deck as well, you're just picking out this one example. And of course, bananas were actually cultivated by humans over the last 10,000 years, so, you know, it falls down flat on basic facts as well. But yeah, I think one of the ones that I always looked at was the fact that people do just see an analogy and go, oh, false analogy. And that idea of the red flag faux pas is a new kind of fallacy that I've coined, where people get a red flag for a fallacy and go, oh, that's obviously a fallacy, and just say it is one without actually deciding correctly or not whether it is a fallacy. And so I did a post called Analogies, the Good and the Bad, and on an educational article, and one of the things he said was, as critics have noticed, it seems gratuitous to provide someone incentive to do what they already enjoy. In the parlance of behavioral studies, it's a case of over-justification. Rewarding children who draw with markers, after all, is like rewarding kids with ice cream sundaes for watching television. So that's an analogy about, you know, rewarding children for doing good work at school. And I think...
Yeah, it works very well because it...
Yeah, because it
punches up images.
It's pretty much the same. It's pretty much exactly the same because a student has doing something that's intuitively interesting for them. And so either way, that analogy actually works, whereas I've had students who are saying, oh, that's a false analogy, but no, that actually works quite well, and it is over-justification. Whereas the second example he uses was to judge the necessary variegated skills of students and teachers with an endless series of tests is absurd as it is unfair, like putting huge scoreboards in classrooms and expecting adults and children to teach and learn under their imposing glare. Now, that to me is a clear false analogy. The fact that, first of all, testing isn't occurring the entire way through. I mean, in the States it might be, but from what I've read, it isn't. It's not the whole way through. It's not ridiculously public like that. And, of course, there's an argument for the fact that kind of competition actually does increase improvement. Anyway, you know, that kind of competition can actually be good for some students as well.
In our example, we talk a clear-cut distinction between illustrative and compelling, but most analogies are somewhere between those two extremes. So don't get hung up with whether it is a false analogy or not, because often it's the case that to rely too much upon it is a weak argument.
That's right.
But that it might be nevertheless fairly compelling in its own way. So rather than saying it is or it isn't, very often you just say it's weak or it's strong or it's it illustrates something, and that's the basis for discussion. So, yeah, I think the thing about analogies is they can often be used playfully in discussion by two people who are actually interested in arriving at a closer approximation of the truth rather than winning the argument. So if two people are having a discussion and say it's about an investment opportunity, and one of the people says, look before you leap, and another person says, strike while the iron is hot, they represent two poles of an argument, and they may assist in moving the argument forward, but neither person should assert that the analogy itself is compelling, that is, that it proves that case. But they're useful for moving an argument forward, for getting
a
clear...
So kind of a communication tool.
Yeah, it's a tool of communication. And also, I think analogy enriches the language. So if you look at some of those analogies, they are, and metaphors, similes, those sorts of things.
Yep.
They enrich the language, and therefore, I think part of argument is the enjoyment of language itself. And I think in that domain of the analogy, we shouldn't be too critical of the use of analogy, provided if it's illustrative, it's only used as illustration rather than a compelling proof of something.
Yeah, when it's the basis of an argument, then you're in trouble. But when it's used to try and convey what you mean to somebody in a clearer way, then it's usually quite useful, as long as it's it is actually apt, of course. So sometimes people are trying to do it, but actually it can take people away. I mean, that's one of the dangers I hear physicists talk about when they're explaining the use of analogy to try and explain, you know, things like general relativity and quantum physics, and they say that that's all well and good. However, sometimes the actual reality of what the mathematics or whatnot is doing actually can get lost in the analogy. But I think that they've got to do that. I mean, they've got to argue about whether the analogy is good or not, but if you're trying to explain some difficult concepts to people, some of the only way you can do it is through some kind of metaphor. And, I mean, certainly as a teacher, you have to use analogies and metaphors all the time in your teaching. I know that whenever certainly in science and in teaching physics and so on, I've always relied heavily on analogies to try and make some kind of concept meaningful to the students, and so you put it in their kind of language and you relate it to something that they already know about, and that's essential. So that kind of analogy can work really, really well as a way of illustrating some kind of process. But again, you know, that's got absolutely nothing to do with whether it's true or not. It's just a way to try and illustrate a particularly difficult concept to somebody. And I think that's one of the dangers you've got when you understand what a false analogy is just seeing an analogy and going, oh, well, that's crap. But if it's not the basis of an argument, then it's okay as long as it's the analogy is apt.
Yeah, I mean, even if in discussion, if somebody comes up with an analogy that takes the form of a proverb, like opportunity only knocks once,
yep.
The skeptic can say something like, yes, but opportunity may be a serial killer.
Yeah.
In other words, you don't have to find a proverb that is the opposite of that.
That's
but
right,
just
yeah.
Playfully just insert move, some
just
extra
follow
codicil.
The same logic. Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's analogy, if it's used playfully as illustration and so on, may stop people taking entrenched positions. So you can actually say to somebody who's talking to you, yes, that sounds compelling or interesting, or yes, I can see some examples where that might work, but have you thought about this? And then you give the opposite situation and use a different analogy to support the opposite situation. And the other thing is it's often, you know, people assume that often that an argument should come out with an outcome that's fairly definitive, but often you can engage in argument about something.
Yeah.
And you can kind of reach an impasse where all the issues have been aired and you can agree between yourselves that really there's no definitive answer as yet. In other words, you've reached a point where you've thrashed out some ideas.
So it's not a Socratic
analogy.
Method.
Yeah, and you can it can be a very healthy thing to say, well, we've had a good go at this. But let's pick up next week and see where we can take it, you know.
Absolutely. So, and, of course, that's one of the best things about doing that is people stepping back and then reflecting on it at a later time, and sometimes that pause is really important because if you just keep going, a lot of the time you'll just get nowhere, whereas if you actually stop and reflect upon the conversation you've had, you can actually think, oh, well, actually, now that I think about what they said when I've got my own time to myself, it can actually change your mind greatly, whereas when you're engaged in a discussion, you don't get that chance a lot of the time to reflect on what was being said.
Schadenfreude. The guilty pleasures of humbug.
The Sorry, Steve. I've just resolved to actually scramble proverbs and create enormous confusion out there in the community. I'm just looking at some of our proverbs here. Let's take make hay while the sun shines. But in an argument, I would say make hay while the iron is hot. And so, you know, just splice two proverbs together.
Oh, you can't beat a mixed metaphor. I love mixed metaphors.
But I'd love watching the confusion in the person's eyes as the synapses.
That's the point of them, and especially when they actually make no sense. That's one of the best. Of course, in an argument now, we're talking about being in bad faith, but putting something like a metaphor like that that makes no sense, but saying like it's completely meaningful, and then giving the person a funny look as if they're stupid, not understanding you.
Remember that one. Make hay while the iron is hot.
Yeah. I'll use that in my next meeting.
Superficially,
we've got to make hay while the iron's hot.
Yeah.
I like it. Look, on that note, we'll leave it there for this week, and next week we'll be back with another fallacy. So until then, you've all been right. Listening to Hunting Humbug 101.
Don't forget, you can subscribe to our podcast via iTunes and other RSS feeds via our website, www.humbughunting.net.